Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and you've tuned in to your favorite campus and community radio station on a Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock, which means that this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for coming by this afternoon. I've got a great show for you this evening. Two authors are going to be joining me here in the KDVS studios live. The first will be Sherman Stein. He's the author of a brand new book called Survival Guide for Outsiders. Get a load of this subtitle, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. Sherman Stein is a longtime resident of Davis. He's a professor emeritus with the math department here at UC Davis. And he's author of a number of books. Most of them have concerned topics, statistical, mathematical, narrowly speaking. But this one, Survival Guide for Outsiders, has given Sherman Stein an opportunity to reach broadly into a great number of other interests that he's held for years. And it is a substantive book, one that he'll be reading from this coming Friday evening at the Avid Reader here in the city of Davis on 2nd Street between E and F Streets, right across the street from the Varsity Theater. That's at 7:30 this coming Friday evening, which is the 9th of April. I'll offer you for the first half hour of this program, Sherman Stein, offering a preview of that event this coming Friday. And then in the second half of the program, we're going to be joined by none other than the new Poet Laureate of the City of Davis, Allegra Silberstein. Allegra Silberstein was named recently the first ever Poet Laureate of the City of Davis. She's been a longtime Davis teacher, now retired. She's a dancer. She's a philanthropist. She might be widely known during National Poetry Month, which this is, for her work as coordinator for The Other Voice, the reading series that takes place at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis out in Northwest Davis. Her poems have been published in a great number of journals. She has two books out and is currently working on a full-length collection of poems, spurred on by her new fame, for she's the Poet Laureate of Davis. She'll be joining me here at about 5:30, and tonight at 8 o'clock, she'll be reading at Bistro 33 as part of Bistro 33's Poetry Night. She'll be joined by Susan Walbarst, and together they will be the featured performers from 8 until 9 p.m., and then there will be a open mic starting at 9 o'clock, starting with some music by Gary Salen, who many of you know because of his longtime musical prowess here at UC Davis and at KDVS. Also, a great proponent of tropical Hawaiian and Jamaican music. So, it'll be an exciting event tonight. Lots of culture here in the city of Davis, and you've come right to the right place to get a preview. First, Sherman Stein, author of Survival Guide for Outsiders, and then Allegra Silberstein. A full plate here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM Davis. I'm very happy to have you here and happy to introduce you to someone who told me about his book, Survival Guide for Outsiders, a great number of months ago, maybe a year ago, at a reading over at 126 Voorhees on the UC Davis campus. And I'm very pleased that Sherman Stein has come out with this book and that he's here to talk to us about his work. Sherman Stein is Professor Emeritus of Mathematics at UC Davis, and he's made a career of writing books about math, including How the Other Half Thinks, Adventures in Mathematical Reasoning, Mathematics, the Man-Made Universe, Algebra and Tiling, Homomorphisms in the Service of Geometry, Strength in Numbers, Discovering the Joy and Power of Mathematics in Everyday Life, and Archimedes, What Did He Do Besides Cry Eureka? His books aim to make mathematics accessible to the reader, to show them what math is really like and why it might be interesting and relevant to their lives. As he says, he wants, quote, to make the beauty of math available to the public. I want to spread the gospel. His most recent book, which I have here in my hand, is The Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. In this book, Sherman Stein uses mathematical concepts and his own experiences to build a handbook for living in a democracy. Sherman Stein, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. And I wanted to say I very much enjoyed looking through your book, Survival Guide for Outsiders. At the end of that introduction, I mentioned a handbook for living in a democracy. And I remember that you quoted early on in the book, Jefferson, something to the effect of the responsibility of citizens to be knowledgeable and informed if they're actually going to participate in that democracy and if actually the democracy is going to work. Do you feel that that was a kind of foundational quotation for what you discovered and what you're working on in this book?
Well, it certainly is different if you live in a democracy versus living in a monarchy or a dictatorship. Presumably, the final arbiter, the backup check for everything, would be an informed public. And we're not so sure that we're well-informed, or it's very hard to tell when we're well-informed because there are powerful influences that want to twist the information. Some stations, for example, take Fox versus public radio. There was a study made of the accuracy of their programs in the following way. In October of 2003, soon after the invasion of Iraq, they asked these three questions. I can recall two of them. One of them was, were there weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq? And at that point, they knew for sure that there weren't any. The other was, did Saddam Hussein have close ties with Al-Qaeda? Those are two of the questions, and the answer at that point was clearly no. Those who listened to Fox, 83% of those people had at least one of these wrong,
really?
Believed that it was whatever they said, and only 23% of those who listened to public radio. It's clear that what people want to do is reinforce their model of the universe. They don't want conflicting information. It hurts. So that little study there makes it clear that some people are operating in what is usually called an alternative universe.
And I'm glad you brought up this idea of a model for the universe, because it seems to me with your background in mathematics, not only as a professor, but as a author of popular books that have sought to demystify math in one way or another, that you can think about your own knowledge of statistics and of mathematical models and perhaps take a left-brain, logical, precise look at what is sometimes the right-brained, emotional state of, for instance, politics and people's relationship with their government?
Well, I do think that we approach problems instinctively with the gut, and this goes back thousands and thousands of years because the problems that we met thousands of years ago were immediate and simple. Now the problems that we meet are usually those of our own creation, and they're extremely complex. And to approach them in the same way is to make fools of all of us and a terrible mess of things. And I think this, we see it in Washington, how difficult it is for them to reach any kind of action on the major problems. So, yes, there are two different ways of approaching things, and we have an instinct to what I call model the universe, whatever we see, to put a structure on it.
Right.
Immediately, a structure. Otherwise, it's very hard to absorb experience.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, my guest is Sherman Stein. He's the author of a brand new book called Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. And he'll be reading from this book this coming Friday evening at 7:30 at the Avid Reader on 2nd Street here in the city of Davis between E and F Streets. So, Sherman Stein, let me ask you this. In preparing to write this book, the sort of research and thinking that you had to do is probably much different from that you've had to do with the many books on mathematics that you've written. And I think that this is probably the furthest outside of your own training that you've gone to for a research project or a book project. Wouldn't you say?
Well, I think being a mathematician, you do your work within a self-contained universe. This is true of a composer of music, for example, and the logic there is very tight. The rules are very specific. The assumptions are laid out. This is true of baseball, too, by the way, where you create an artificial bubble.
Right.
And so I'm very hypersensitive to the madness that by which we usually reach conclusions in the so-called real world. And as I wouldn't call my work research, though it spread over about 30 years as I thought about the subjects, I kept collecting examples over the years. And I think you could probably read my book just by reading the examples. They go back, some of them over 2,000 years, some of them just 100 years, some very current. But I got interested in this because I was a nuclear activist. I got interested in nuclear activism because I was afraid there would be a nuclear war. And we have still thousands of weapons, and the danger still lurks. But at that point, I noticed that there were three air bases near Davis, and that they would be ideal targets for a nuclear missile, and that we would maybe not be a victim of the blast, but the radiation would blow toward us. And having studied the origin of World War I and II, and knowing that both of them could have been avoided, and studying the Cuban Missile Crisis, and you can actually read the secret deliberations. They were recorded. You can read them today. Having read them, and even Kennedy was worried at that point that there was going to be a nuclear war. There was the Berlin Crisis of 1961, the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, and in both cases, he worried that this could lead to a nuclear war through a series of mistakes made by very bright people. So I did what I could. I went around talking about these things. I wrote a docudrama based on the secret testimony, and it was put on at Picnic Day a couple of years. So 1,000 people or so heard it. In fact, it was acted out by faculty and students. But then I read books about the subject. Kissinger wrote a book in which he argue that you could have a graduated nuclear war. You would start out with little bombs and work up to big atomic bombs or thermonuclear.
Right.
And I said to myself, you know, this is nonsense. And by the way, Kennedy agreed with this. And then I read a book by Herman Kahn, and he argued that it's a different point of view. He said that it's better to have a good defense and protect people because it's, if you have a nuclear war, it is better to have 50 million people survive than 20 million people survive, and you can't argue with that. But I never call a nuclear bomb a nuclear weapon. It is not a weapon. Whenever I hear it, it is absurd because it is its use would be disproportionate to any possible cause. So that's how I got interested in this, and I got interested in the notion of experts. That was my entree into this field, which led me away from mathematics as an avocation, at least. And I said, what is an expert? How do we know a person is an expert? And what are their roles? They help us choose, they help us make decisions, etc. And then I realized gradually that there are two types of experts. There are those that you whose performance you can audit easily, such as a juggler. You can look at him and you can see what he's doing, and there's no doubt. In fact, the whole point of his performance is to be judged immediately. On the other hand, you have, on the other extreme, maybe economists or psychiatrists. The whole field of economics forces the members of that profession to not be an expert in the sense of an easy audit. And now there are many economists who are criticizing the whole field, the basic assumptions of the field, given the present recession, which almost none of them had anticipated. So I decided that there are really two types of experts. One is the professional, like the juggler, and the other is what is called in other tribes the shaman, who performs important roles but is very hard to audit. So that started it going, and then I had to study choice. What is it? How do we choose? How do we choose in the apples and oranges case? What goes on? You can't use numbers. In fact, I spent five chapters in the book explaining why numbers will not rescue rationality. In fact, I couldn't even define rationality at the end, and I've never seen a good definition. When is a person being rational? And that led to other things, the things that I had to consider, and at the end of the book, it all I had to consider prediction, because every decision is based on a prediction of what would happen. And I realized that prediction, no one studies prediction as a scientific discipline.
Right.
And I had to study that. And then finally it all came together with what I call the action syndrome, where you shift from contemplation to action and your mind changes completely.
That's wonderful. When you speak of prediction and numbers, I came across an interesting article yesterday saying that the movie industry is very much interested in predicting how well a film will do.
Huh.
And that information is crucial for them because it helps them to decide how long to keep films in theaters, how much to budget for ongoing publicity, how much actors who appear in those films should be paid in subsequent films, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But they've had a great deal of trouble predicting exactly what sort of film is going to do well and which will not.
Yes, absolutely.
And what they've turned to, in this study that I read yesterday, they've turned to Twitter, and that the many thousands of people who are on Twitter, all of their tweets can be searched and categorized immediately, and that the sort of attitudes that people have towards films, with this large cross-section of Twitterers, that it's actually a much more accurate predictor of the success of a film than any methods that they had been using beforehand.
Do they wait until the first day of the... Yes, that makes sense, because I had read an article years ago in exactly the same problem.
Right.
And it was word of mouth, evidently, that determines whether a film's going to succeed. And this is in spite of the fact that a big film will have a budget of $10 million for advertising. It could all be wasted.
Right, right. Well, it's exciting to see both what Twitter can do and how we can better pay attention to people through Twitter as a tool. Well, we had a caller. Let's see who it is. Welcome, caller, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour with Sherman Stein.
Actually, I just have a message to Dr. Andy that Allegra is on her way and will be there shortly.
Excellent. That's great news. We're looking forward to hearing from Allegra Silverstein in the second half of the program.
She was in the wrong location. She'll be there shortly.
That's quite all right.
Great show. Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much. Are you coming to see Allegra at the poetry reading tonight?
I would not miss it for the world.
Excellent. Good.
Right,
I'll see you there.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's one of the many fans across town of Allegra Silverstein. She is the author of a couple books of poetry, and she's also the brand new poet laureate of the city of Davis. She'll be reading tonight as part of the Poetry Night reading series at Bistro 33. That's tonight, April 7th at 8 o'clock. Bistro 33 here in Davis is at 226 F Street. And Allegra and Susan Walbarst will be taking the mic around 8 o'clock. There will be an open mic at 9. And so I wanted to throw in a little bit of technology there, Sherman Stein, to offer another indication of how difficult it is to predict things. One of the predictions being a topic that you cover in your book, Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. Now, many people hearing that title may have questions, and that is, if we turn to experts for wisdom, for predictions, etc., why is it that we need protection from these thought leaders, if you will?
Well, it's important to be aware of the difference between a professional and a shaman.
Okay.
We like to pretend that the shaman knows something and we can relax and we can go to the theater. But I think we're spending too much time in the theater and golf and God knows what, all the entertainment, the TV, etc. And we should be tithing ourselves so that we don't put that much responsibility on the poor shamans who really don't know exactly what will be happening. And in a democracy, this is a dangerous thing to just entertain ourselves.
Right.
With circuses, and not even, shall I say, tithe our time, a tenth of our time, of our entertainment time, our discretionary time, to the cause of democracy, of informing ourselves by various sources of information to make sure that we're not bamboozled. And there's a great tendency for bamboozlement in this country.
And so it might not be, then, the way that you present it, that these experts are malicious or manipulative, just that they're often wrong, and that we might consider what sort of insurance policy to take out. You brought up tithing. So as to protect ourselves when they are wrong. And we should say that this conversation is happening in the context of Alan Greenspan appearing today before Congress to defend his policies with regard to shepherding the economy. And the
yes, he's an ideal shaman. In fact, I do discuss him in the book. He's testifying before a senator, and the senator says, you know, when Greenspan talks, it's like the oracle, and we all bow down, and we're afraid to question him. Greenspan had that aura of knowing something, and he didn't.
Right.
He's part of the wreckage crew that brought us this recession.
Absolutely. When I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my father had attended the same video rental store as both the Vice President of the United States, who we would see there on occasion, and back then it was George H.W. Bush, and as Paul Volcker, who then was the head of the Fed. And they knew each other. And so my dad would say, you know, Paul, how are you? And Paul Volcker would say, Davey, I'm not well. And they both knew what he was talking about. He wasn't talking about his health. He was talking about the health of the economy and the concerns he had. So, but again, it comes back to this idea, to what extent can you trust the shaman? And does the shaman really know what he's talking about?
Well,
or can he?
I try to get close to the what I call the bullseye, which is the ground zero of the event, of the information. When I evaluate what's going on in Iraq, I pay very little attention to the newspaper. I'm watching one variable, and that is how many of the 2 million Iraqis who fled the country are coming back.
Right.
That's all. And until they come back, things are a mess. And that's one way. In the case of the health insurance problem, how to take care of all of us, I'm an expert on that because of certain experience. I've had pneumonia as an adult 3 times. I've had it in Davis, I've had it in New York, and I had it in what's called socialized medicine of London. And in each case, they fixed me very nicely. And I asked people in England, and I've talked to people in Canada, how's it working? It works fine. So that's where I try to get my information. I try to bypass the typical source of information where someone is trying to spin it and find out what really happens. It's not easy, especially for events that occur in a foreign country. All the information that we get is slanted either intentionally or unintentionally.
Heavily filtered. Well, we've got another caller. Let's see who this is. Hi, caller. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour with Sherman Stein, author of Survival Guide for Outsiders.
Hi, Andy. This is Ron.
Hi, Ron. How are you? Sherman, let me ask you to put your headphones on so that you can hear Ron Glick, who's phoning in this afternoon, because I've horned in on some of his territory, and so Ron wanted to add his comment. What do you have for us, Ron?
What territory is that, Andy?
Well, smart people who have something to say about politically charged topics. Usually we save that for Speaking in Tongues, Friday afternoons at 5 here on KBS.
It's true, but I've stepped on your territory as well with the Poet Laureate.
I hope you will. And you know she's performing tonight at Bistro 33.
Well, I hope to be able to go and meet her. But what prompted me to call was your discussion about predicting movies. And there is a great predictor, which is if there was a previous movie of the same subject that made money. And this is why you always have sequels. And the model is that they keep making sequels until one doesn't make money. James Bond is a great example of this. No James Bond movie has ever lost money. It's the true genius of James Bond. The other thing I wanted to ask your guest about is, as I was listening to him, I began to think about the black swan scenario, where when he was talking about predictions, that things happen that nobody can predict. And much of our fate is dependent just on the luck of the draw. And I'll just take my response off the air.
Great. Thanks very much, Ron. I look forward to hearing you this Friday at 5 here on KTBS.
Thanks, Andy. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, I read the book, The Black Swan, by Taleb. He worries about the event that no one could anticipate, and it certainly the kind of thing that one has to take into consideration. And he's worried about the mathematical formulas, these models, which don't take that into consideration. For example, the normal distribution. And I've looked at the formula, the famous Black-Scholes formula, and I personally consider it total nonsense. But in the book, I don't go that far as worrying about the black swan. I worry about what I call the grimp, which is the great risk, the gigantic risk with incredibly minute probability of occurring. An example for us would be the Berryessa Dam. It's there, and it may last forever until it silts up. but it has a small probability, maybe due to an earthquake, there have been big earthquakes in winters, that it might swamp winters. But we live with it. It is not the biggest grimp. There are others. And I describe the collapse of the Teton Dam and the scenario that goes always with the end of a grimp. On the other hand, the biggest grimp is one that no one even worries about anymore, and that is the threat of nuclear war. This can happen. You only have to, as I've said before, just look at history to see that bright men can do things that they wish they had to avoid. So, yes, the black swan is there, and the grimp is a modified version of it where you actually know what the threat is. You know the black swan, but you just don't know if it's going to make trouble.
Interesting. Well, we're chatting this afternoon and hearing from Sherman Stein. He's the author of Strength in Numbers. His most recent book is Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. He's a Davis resident, and he'll be reading from this book this coming Friday afternoon at 7:30 at the Avid Reader. The Avid Reader is an independent bookstore here in the city of Davis on 2nd Street between E and F Streets. And that's this coming Friday at 7:30. Sherman Stein, Allegra Silberstein is here, and I'm hoping that, as you know, Allegra, you might stick around and help me ask her a few questions. She's going to be in the hot seat because she's our new poet laureate, and she's reading tonight at Bistro 33 at 8 o'clock.
I'll try to stick around, but I have to have dinner, and I don't understand where you squeeze in your dinner because you're going to be busy at 8 o'clock.
That's true. I've got way too much going on, and you know, I have to eat where I can. But Allegra's here. I want to escort her in. So I want to thank you for your remarks in support of Survival Guide for Outsiders. It's a fascinating book, and I'm glad that I have a copy. I'm sure many folks listening would also like to pick up a copy. But we'll all get to see you this coming Friday at 7:30 at the Avid Reader. Thanks for your time this evening.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's an important message from the Linux Users Group of Davis. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes of messages with Allegra Silberstein, the new poet laureate of the city of Davis. Stick around.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open-source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org. Thank you.
This is Dr. Andy with an important message. Catcher in the Rye, Of Mice and Men, Harry Potter, Captain Underpants, what's your favorite book? Chances are, good, that someone has tried to ban it. Every year, there are hundreds of attempts to remove books from schools and libraries. Celebrate your freedom to read during Banned Books Week, September 25th to October 5th, 2010. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at ala.org. A public service message brought to you by KDBS Davis. Ladies and gentlemen, Allegra Silberstein is here. In 2010, Allegra Jostad Silberstein was named the first ever poet laureate of the city of Davis. A longtime Davis teacher, now retired, a dancer, a philanthropist, Allegra Silberstein is known widely for her work as coordinator for The Other Voice, a reading series that takes place at the UU Church of Davis, and for her support of local writers. Her poems have been published in a great number of journals, including Poetry Depth Quarterly, The Yellow Crow, Blue Unicorn, Rattlesnake Press, Poetry Now, Iodine Poetry, Poetry of the New West, California Quarterly, and others. She's also placed poems in a variety of anthologies, including the Sacramento Anthology, 100 Poems, Gatherings, A Woman's Place, and Where Do I Walk? Her first chapbook, Acceptance, was published in 1999, and In the Folds was published by Rattlesnake Press in 2005. She's currently working on a full-length book of poems, and she may read from some of those this evening, beginning around 8 o'clock at Bistro 33, 226 F Street in the city of Davis, as part of the Poetry Night reading series. Allegra Silberstein, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi there, and Dr. Andiana, yes. Thank you for being so instrumental in getting the city council to adopt the idea of a Davis Poet Laureate.
Absolutely. Well, it was the idea of Ron Glick, primarily, who we heard from in the first half hour. And he and I got together, and we banged out the wording for the position. And it was approved by a series of committees, and I was very pleased that that we live in a city that supports poetry, and that it received a 4-to-1 positive vote from our city council. So I think that's very encouraging.
Yes.
And also encouraging that folks like you would be willing to put your hat in the ring for this honorary position. Not surprisingly, it's not a paid position at a time when there's so little money to pay for necessities like poetry. Nevertheless, you've agreed to be our poet laureate, our first ever, for a 2-year term. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about what being our poet laureate means to you and what sort of plans you have for your work as poet laureate of the city of Davis.
Well, first of all, it means a great honor, and then it means a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of having to say, what can I cut out now so that I can have room for this extra work?
Right.
And one of the things that I really want to encourage is the memorization of poetry by very young children. The mind of the young child is very receptive to this kind of thing. And I know my life has been made considerably richer by just little fragments of poems sometimes that you see a daffodil and you think of Wordsworth's, I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high, or Hill and Vales,
right.
And all at once I saw a host of golden daffodils.
Yeah.
And they're more beautiful because of the remembered lines.
Absolutely. It really enriches one's life and helps to ward off loneliness, that you have great lines of poetry that you can call upon when you need them.
I want to share another thing about that. I had given a presentation at Tahoe to the English teachers many years ago and had an article there about the importance of memorizing. And somebody wrote to tell me that when he was imprisoned in Vietnam, it was the memory of poetry that helped him to survive
Oh, really?
That loneliness, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. and necessary for many of us when we have, if you've memorized a poem, you always have that internal resource to call upon.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit more about your life in Davis as a poet, and what sort of work did you do to help to prepare yourself for the position as poet laureate, but perhaps more importantly, the position of poet here in the community of Davis?
Well, that's a big question. As far as preparing, it was a friend of mine, Heather Lauder Clay, who nominated me for this position.
Mm-hmm.
And if it hadn't been for her, I never would have, you know, gotten together all of the things you have to get together to send in for something like this. So I owe a lot to her. And about the preparation for poetry, I think it can be at times in your life, a little bit of an escape. When things are really feeling miserable and you're down, you write about it, and that helps a lot. The very first poem I ever published was about that, and it was published in a journal called A Woman's Place.
Mm-hmm.
That was funded by the Davis Arts Commission.
Oh, wonderful.
So, and it was just called A Memory of Writing, and I've probably been writing all my life, but not seriously writing probably until the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure what the preparation is. It's just, you know, something in life hits you, or something. Maybe it's just some beautiful thing you see. A poem I'll share with you later, it was just the result of this kind of thing, you know, driving to a poetry reading and just being moved by something along the way.
Excellent.
And...
Well, speaking of poetry readings, you've coordinated for a long time the poetry series that happens out at the Unitarian Church here in the city of Davis, The Other Voice.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the genesis of those poetry readings, and what is your objective? You've certainly had some wonderful poets out there.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could reflect a little bit on coordinating that for a long time.
Well, let's see. I think it began about... And I'm really bad at remembering dates, but at least 10 years ago, if not more. And it was several people, and I wasn't really, really active in the first couple of years on it, because there were several people at the Unitarian Church who said, you know, there's got to be a lot of poets here, and why don't we have a little coffee house, or we can have a place where we can even have a glass of wine, and share some poems and this kind of thing. So I was one of the very first readers at that. And then within about a couple of years, the other people who were kind of leading it said they needed a break, and I came in and have been there, you know, for at least 10 years. There was one year when I dropped out. James Lee Jobe took over for me. I had some kind of health thing that the doctors never could figure out what it was, but you know, it was just like exhaustion all the time.
Yeah.
So, but what's happening now is very exciting, because now I have people approaching me saying, could we read at The Other Voice?
Right.
And that's really exciting and lovely. And I always try to have a local person reading along with it. Once in a while, our next reading is with... Oh, no, I do have a local person. I take that back. I was going to say it's two people from my... writing workshop group that I go to in Sacramento. One is Katie Brown, who is here in Davis, and Joyce Odom. So they'll be reading for us on the 16th.
Wonderful. That's at the 16th. Tell people, and those are always on Fridays.
Yes, third Friday.
Third Friday. And tell people the time and also where one finds the reading series.
Okay, the time is at 7:30. Mm-hmm. Give yourself plenty of time, because it's at the Unitarian Church, which is out on Patwin Road, and it's a little difficult to find. So, especially if it's in the dark. It's not so bad now, when the light is with us longer.
Right.
And it's in the library, and there is always an open mic and always refreshments.
So featured readers, an open mic afterwards, and refreshments provided by the poetry series itself.
Yes, by me and my friend Betty Black, who always bakes cookies for us.
And they're very tasty. I can certainly attest to that. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we return, we're going to hear a poem by the new poet laureate of Davis. Allegra Silberstein is here in the studio. You're listening to KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Air filled with common household allergens can cause headaches, allergies, and even asthma. Here are a few tips to help keep the air in your home fresh. Ventilate the attic and crawl spaces to prevent moisture and mold buildup. Also, use an air dehumidifier or air conditioner to control indoor humidity. To help clean air circulate, change air conditioning and furnace filters every 2 months. It's also important to service your heating and cooling systems regularly.
Allegra Silberstein is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're going to hear in a moment a sample of her poetry. If you'd like to meet Allegra, if you'd like to see her read her poetry live, you'll have that opportunity this evening. For beginning at 8 o'clock this evening at Bistro 33, which is at 226 F Street, Allegra Silberstein will be taking the stage. She'll be joined this afternoon by Susan Walbarst. And Susan is another local poet who's been widely published, including in the Naugatuck River Review, Poetry Now, and the YOLO Crow. In 2008, she won first place in the Sacramento Poetry Center Poetry Contest for her poem, Diagnosis. Susan Walbarst will be opening for Allegra Silberstein this evening at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. For more information, visit poetryanddavis.blogspot.com. Allegra, I'm very curious to know what poem you've picked out to share with listeners at home.
It's a poem called On the Way, and it's very special for a couple of reasons. One is that it reflects my love of nature and how important it is in my life. And the other, because this is a poem that I read to the Civic Arts Commission right. When I was being interviewed.
Excellent. When you were being interviewed for the position of Poet Laureate.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent. Well, great. And it's called On the Way?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
At 7 o'clock in the evening, on the way to a poetry reading, I saw by the edge of the road, in a clear space open to mountains, just past the crowding of houses, a shimmering, sun-polished wild oats, golden seed pearls strung on their stalks, swaying in perfect freedom, easy in a gentle breeze. For these brief moments, miracles seemed logical. How certain gifted believers can be given merry visions, how the heart stops momentarily and then does a little flip-flop when the beloved appears, how the cripple can walk and the blind be given sight, how rainbows are a promise. At 1:30 the next hour, when it came my turn to read, the words had gone astray. I spoke pale shadows beside an inner ache for the wayside shining I had seen earlier. Would that I could sprinkle words with holy water, set them like a seal upon my palm, press them to my lips, and let them fall upon the page like evening sunlight on wild oats.
Oh, that's wonderful. It makes me think a little bit about the poetry series that you run out at the UU Church, which is surrounded on a couple sides by fields out there.
It was on the way to this reading.
Yeah. It really reminds us the site of those readings are agricultural roots here in the city of Davis.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, you'll be reading tonight at Bistro 33. You talked about calling upon your previous work as a teacher and trying to re-inspire an interest in poetry in youngsters. What are some of your other responsibilities or plans as our new Poet Laureate of the City of Davis?
Well, I've been told that I will be asked to perhaps write some poems for certain civic functions, which will be very, very nice.
Right.
The other thing that I would like to do is to get people to write about historic places and mm-hmm. historic people. Somebody just told me there's a really big blank wall over at the Veterans Memorial Theater, and maybe I could talk them into letting me put frame pictures with the poem beneath, or even, you know, just a prose poem. And,
right.
and the thing, there's, for instance, there's a gorgeous old barn that's down by the side of the cemetery.
I know that one, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
And I want somebody to get a picture of it and then to write something of the history of that barn before it gets destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's so many wonderful old people who were the pioneers here in Davis, if we can get pictures and somebody who knows of them can write about them. And I was inspired to do this by seeing in the long hallway at the Palms Theater in Winters,
mm-hmm.
they have pictures of people with these they were like prose poems to me, telling about them underneath. And though I wanted to get home early, I stayed and looked at them all.
Right. Oh, that's wonderful.
And
so this idea of representing history and the people who have been foundational here in the city of
right.
Davis, and trying to do that in a creative, evocative way with,
yes.
with poetry or prose poetry.
And I have to tell you, I've got a reading lined up at Covell Gardens.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so bad with names, I forget the name of the gal there who spoke to me about it, but she's going to also get some of the older people there who remember poems from their childhood to read those poems, so it'll be a cooperative reading of
wonderful.
These people and me. And then there is something that I just found out about that I think is so wonderful. It's called Keep a Poem in Your Pocket Day.
Uh-huh. And tell us about that.
Yeah. It started in 2002 in New York City, where the mayor proclaimed a Poem in Your Pocket Day. And I think it was the 20th, I'm not sure. But I want to have to join with cities across the nation who are doing a Keep a Poem in Your Pocket Day on Thursday, the 29th of April. And what you do on this day is you carry with you either a whole bunch of copies of a poem, and every time you meet somebody, your coworker, a family, friend, whatever, take that poem out and share the poem with them. And you could share it, if it's a poem you've memorized, you can just read it. You can just say it to them.
Right.
Or just read it and not hand out the poem. And eventually, by next year, I'm hoping we can make it an even bigger thing. But
excellent. So that they, potentially these poems could be given out like so many business cards of a ostentatious salesperson. But a salesperson on behalf of poetry and creativity
right.
and free expression.
Right.
Wonderful.
And I would encourage people to, if they've written a poem of their own, share that.
Absolutely.
And I'm hoping to get to be able to talk to the children in the elementary grades to get them excited and working on this.
I've done that sort of work with my daughter's various classes in elementary schools and middle schools here in Davis, and it really is rewarding. It's a wonderful opportunity to work with youngsters and to share with them that that excitement about memorizing a poem, writing a poem, fooling around with language, with words, with figurative language. They really love that.
Yeah, I got missed phone messages out to all the principals of the elementary schools, and I'm hoping to get some calls back.
Right, right.
I might have to resort to email.
Well, whatever works, whatever works. If you're just joining us, my guest this afternoon is Allegra Silberstein. She's the new Poet Laureate of the City of Davis, and she's joined us here as a sneak preview of the reading that she's giving in just over 2 hours at Poetry Night at Bistro 33. Every first Wednesday of the month, Bistro 33 opens up its banquet room and presents to local lovers of culture, lovers of literary expression, an opportunity to see prominent featured poets, some of them locals like Allegra Silberstein and Susan Wahlbarst, some of them travelers from faraway lands. I know that they've got some Boston performance poets coming at the end of May. And Patrick Grizel, who's one of the past co-founders of the Sacramento Poetry Center, will be reading as well in the first Wednesday in May. So great poets coming up. Joshua Clover will be reading there in June. And an opportunity for you, if you're also interested in poetry, to see what all the fun is about. And tonight, if you're so inclined, to see Allegra Silberstein read at Bistro 33 at 8 p.m. More information available at poetryindavis.blogspot.com. Allegra Silberstein, it's been wonderful to talk with you about your work and your poetry. Do you have anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
Well, just one more thing. I want to thank Bistro 33 for making this opportunity possible. It's a wonderful place to read poetry, and they are so gracious and lovely there. Big thanks to them.
Absolutely. And remind us again the date of your next, and the readers at your next poetry reading out at the UU Church.
Yes. It is the 16th of this month, coming up very fast. It's the third, always a third Friday, but this third Friday came up very, very fast.
Right, absolutely.
And it's at 7:30 in the library of the Unitarian Church, and the church is located at 27074 Petwin Road. And give yourself plenty of time to get there. And we have refreshments and open mic following our featured readers, who are Joyce Odom and Katie Brown.
Excellent. And that is a week from Friday?
Yes.
And then this coming Friday, you might already know this, Sherman Stein is going to be reading from his new book, Survival Guide for Outsiders, How to Protect Yourself from Politicians, Experts, and Other Insiders. That's this coming Friday evening at 7:30 at the Avid Reader.
And I'll be there.
Excellent. I'm going to try to be there as well. I'll see how many of my children they'll let me arrive with. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got just a couple public service announcements to share with you. And then when we return, concluding comments from the host of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
The 2010 KBBS Annual Fundraiser, Monday, April 19th through Sunday, April 25th. Please show your support for Unity Radio and donate at the 2010 KBBS Annual Fundraiser, Monday, April 19th through Sunday, April 25th.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, reminding you, as that last public service announcement did, that later this month we're celebrating not only poetry for National Poetry Month, but KDVS itself, for our annual fundraiser is coming up. Yes, around the third week of April, every year for decades now, KDVS has provided you an opportunity to share your thanks in a monetary way with the radio station that provides 24/7 examples of music that is innovative, interesting, unheard of, in that you're not going to hear it on local commercial radio stations, as well as hosts of public affairs shows, such as Ron Glick, who phoned in earlier to talk with Sherman Stein, with the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett, and with those folks over at This Week in Science, Dr. Kiki, I think she calls herself sometimes, and her friend Justin. They've really taken off into the stratosphere of public radio impressiveness with This Week in Science every Tuesday morning from 8:30 to 9:30. These are the people and many radio music DJs who work all year for you with the hopes that you will show your thanks just for 1 week. For instance, on my particular fundraiser show, I plan to raise $1,500 during that 1 hour on April 21st. Do you think I can do it? I bet I can, but only with your help. So make sure that you start socking away some money now to help out KDBS during fundraiser week later on in this month of April. Speaking of great music, we've got some great music coming up. Would you characters like to tell us the names of yourselves and your show?
I'm Tara Zachtel.
And I'm Pebbles.
And our show is called Bedrock, with music to make your bedrock.
Excellent. So stick around for that, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.